Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
It's Friday. It's the Untitled Party Podcast. UBP. I'm Scott Telford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hello, everyone.
Recording this on a Thursday, funnily enough, but we're going to put it out on the Friday. That's the magic of production schedules.
Do you want to know what I'm off for?
Being an absolute G.
Well, I mean, that is very true, actually. Because by G, you mean going to Warhammer World in Nottingham. Yeah, that's right. I booked a day off work so I can go and hang out with my friends and play Warhammer.
That's a beautiful thing. I'm going down to London on the weekend to see two gigs that have been cancelled. So I'm just going to go stand in London for a bit. But, you've got to get out and about. You've got to go see the world of London. But yeah, so we thought we'd record it earlier, which means we haven't put the question out on Twitter for whatever people want us to talk about that's brand new. I think it'll be GTA things. But we'll wait and see how the week goes. Check the War Culture YouTube channel for a breakdown with me and Josh talking about the absolute state of the supposed definitive editions of those games. But we have plenty of questions left over from previous weeks anyway, because you guys are always so brilliant and you send in so many things for us to talk about anyway. So we've still got plenty of things to break down. So first question from Elfar Oliver, who says, do you think It Takes Two and such games of obscure genres deserves the Game of the Year nomination, or will over-the-shoulder story-heavy games always dominate? Will these genres be like horror movies at the Oscars and always get overlooked? Also, do you pronounce Basil the Spice different from Basil the Person?
No, I don't pronounce it different. I know that some people pronounce it Basil.
Americans sometimes do that where they make something sound more English than it actually is. The whole garage thing. It's just like,
They can't be bothered to spell our words that we've given them. Graciously, we gave them. I love the fact that there's that Biffy Clyro song where it's like aluminium. There's an I next to the L and M. And it's just like, and then so the Americans just decided, now we're just going to take that I straight out. So now it's just aluminum. They said that we're wrong. We have the periodic table, mate. Come on.
I can't think of the name of the comedian Ed Byrne. I love when he's like everyone knows it's pronounced tin. I love that's his go-to thing. Basil Big Bad Baz from Giant Citizen Kabuto would be my reference point as a very old man. But yeah, I think that's kind of the thing. It seems like one of the only ways to do a narrative heavyweight game is the over shoulder production thing. It's the Naughty Dog thing, it's the Sony thing.
Yeah,
and they definitely get favored.
We got to look at, I'm not saying this is the first instance, but it's one that always rings true with me. And that is whenever Ken Levine talks about the original BioShock, because that was obviously meant to be a follow-up. Like, it's a spiritual successor to System Shock, hence why it's BioShock instead. And a lot of the design choices that him and his team were making were to kind of go down a point-and-click route until Microsoft finally got their... I'm not sure if it was Microsoft themselves, but somebody was pretty high up on the totem pole just said, look, the only way you're going to sell this is if you turn it into a shooter. That's why the shooting mechanics in the first game do feel it works in terms of what you've got here, but firing guns underwater, probably not the smartest idea, especially if one of those bullets could ricochet off one of those things and destroy the entire
city.
Now
that you said that, that kind of breaks all BioShock. There's so much glass at all times.
They actually had to write it into the book because there's a companion novel that came out that said that it's like specially tempered glass, because obviously that many leagues below sea it would break anyway. So they had to make sure that it was like, don't worry guys, like a bullet would ricochet off it.
I feel like there's some sort of list in that of just sort of like last minute, oh no, we didn't think of that. No, don't worry about it. It's special glass.
It still doesn't change the problem that if there is a leak in at all, even like a singular thing, then the pressure from the outside definitely would shatter the entire... Anyway, but besides the point.
No, but still, I think... I don't don't think all hope is lost. I think you look to the likes of Celeste being nominated a couple of years ago. I think it's just like sheer quality of game. It's more the storytelling as opposed to how you told the story. And like something like Celeste has that perfect marriage of gameplay and story. I think it just depends how it's done.
You are very right. But I think that when it comes down to trying to market that idea, you might have this like beautiful concept. You might have this amazing world and this atmosphere that you've all built up. But unfortunately, unless you can deliver it in a way that plays, that the common man will be able to pick up and just go, yeah, I understand this. I get this as a game. I mean, a lot of concessions were made with the God of War 2018 version. Like the approach to combat was moved towards stuff that was more popular at the time. The Batman Arkham Asylum's like style, like fighting system rather than the crazy over the top stuff. There's a lot of things that have been that you kind of have to smooth the edges on in order to get noticed. And I will agree that it, like there are a lot of indie games that do get snubbed, but unfortunately it's because of the fact they don't have the monolithic production values. They don't have the marketing buzz. They don't get in enough people's homes to generate that sort of widespread like demand for it to be represented. Like Disco Elysium was a rare exception when it like scooped some awards because it came out of nowhere but was doing something interesting enough that it caught this sort of attention, that lightning in a bottle moment. There are so many indie games that do what Disco Elysium does with different mechanics and ideas, but they don't get recognized because of the fact that there just isn't enough of a pull to get them in front of people in the first place.
Yeah, very true. I think that I'd be curious whether Disco Elysium gets counted this year because it's on console this year. And like a lot of different, the Game Awards themselves, I think, tend to only look at console release dates, as do we when we do Game of the Year stuff. But yeah, it's weird like when you talk about like what qualify, what puts something in that sort of nebulous bracket as, like, oh, this is a Game of the Year contender. Like it tends to usually come with a certain type of weight, like emotional weight or gameplay weight. There's something to it that sort of goes like, oh, I had a really serious time with that. Like, it's very rare that, I mean, I guess like Breath of the Wild got lots of Game of the Years in 2017, but even that was in itself quite a mature Zelda. It wasn't anything like Wind Waker or something like that. So I think it is interesting. It Takes Two, I've not finished. That game was way longer than I thought. And me and my wife played quite a lot of it. And then we realized that we were only about halfway through. And we're just sort of like, oh God, there's a whole other, there's way more to this. And we'll get back to that later. So I still need to get through that. I think the front runner for this year is Returnal, just because it's such a meticulous clockwork mechanism of a game that I hated for the longest time this year, but I finally managed to see credits last week, and I can appreciate it for what it is and everything. But that game has that sense of weight to it that I think allows it, quote unquote, to be in the Game of the Year conversation, maybe in a way that Resident Evil 8 doesn't.
Well, it goes back to like the Oscars, isn't it? Like they took the piss out of it in American Dad like a few seasons.
Joseph Farah's stuck his finger in.
They basically were just there like, okay, if you want to get an Oscar, you need to make it the saddest thing possible. And I feel like it's because of the fact that critics do pay attention to moving things. Like if it's based on horrible trauma of humanity, if it's based on like abject human suffering, you are unfortunately more likely to garner more press attention because it's always seen as that hard to describe quantity of like, it's almost cool to reach into the dark and depressing points of our lives and draw from those very raw experiences.
I mean, like the old God of Wars were like, especially 2 and 3. Well, for me, God of War 2 is like my favorite, but those games didn't win, as far as I know, Game of the Year awards. And I mean, they were very tough competition in those years, the likes of GTA and everything. But when God of War matured itself, quote unquote, and became more weighty and leaden and more, you know, drawn out kind of thing in a good way. Then it, so all of a sudden it was a Game of the Year contender. I mean, I do think God of War 2018 is one of the best games of all time, but it is that interesting. Once you start applying some weight to it, all of a sudden it sort of enters like an echelon of recommendability that sort of seems to elevate it.
I wonder if you could apply that level of grittiness to any sort of game and then catapult it into the eyes of the critics. Like, because I'm thinking, like, imagine like you take, well, take something like Kirby, the most like friendly and chill like mascot.
Oh, he's
just got.
He eats all the time, but he's never full. He's just sort of sits there.
But imagine like if it's like his internal thing, he has like a Max Payne dialogue where it's just kind of like, I eat to fill a void and like sort of thing. And it goes on about like body image and stuff like that.
That whole, I mean, they're doing the next Kirby is the one that's all set in the post-apocalyptic world. So why he's survived. It's set in the Last of Us world.
I know, but it's not going to be dark and gritty, is it? It's not going to just be like, oh, there's human skeletons there. Better suck up them bones, Kirby.
If one of the things that he could swallow was like a guy in a checkered shirt, like a Last of Us, like a Joel style NPC and he can get his own little checkered shirt on, I would adore that.
what I want to see is an extended cut. You know, when Joel and Ellie see the giraffes and you can spend all your time doing that, but you just see the giraffes go and just get sucked away. And Ellie's like, what?
Flies past, just bobs past. Like, so yeah, that's what I do. yes. But either way, yeah, I think It Takes Two is actually surprisingly one of the Game of the Year contenders. That game is ludicrously polished, like genuinely so recommendable. I think the fact that that team went from Brothers to A Way Out to It Takes Two. It Takes Two is their most accomplished thing so far. Mm-hmm. It's just that it needs to be played in co-op, and that tends to put people off because you literally do need someone else to go through the whole thing with you. But yeah, I'd be curious to see how it goes. I think something like Returnal will get it this year. But It Takes Two should absolutely be in the conversation. Next question from Jacob Wright. Hope you Legends of Fridays are well. With director's cuts of Ghost of Tsushima and Death Stranding now out, which other game deserves a director's cut? Also, would you be up for a UBP party bus tour where we all play games and drink? Yes. Yes, I would. We can all try Jules's weird hot sauce thing that he keeps going on about.
You mean the Kubo?
Have you named it now?
Oh, it's got a Kubo, because me and my missus are watching Kubo and the Two Strings when she came up.
Oh, shallow. Okay.
So I've got to give credit where credit's due. Kerry is the real mastermind behind this.
Okay. That thing still sounded like a hell of a challenge. If we had a bunch of people in a room, I would do that, followed by Da Bomb from Hot Ones.
Well, you could have that, and then you could have my Elegant Tramp cocktail, couldn't you? With the the White Lightning, the shot ETC. Of vodka. Yeah, all of the like crazy stuff there. Because I remember we actually had somebody very kindly create a UBP cocktail, which sounded really nice. We have that as well.
If we ever got the UBP party bus on the road, the UPB potentially, the untitled
party
podcast bus, I don't know. Once that's on the road, and we can start drawing up a menu and stuff. But we talked about that a few years ago, about doing like a chatty face tour thing.
I'd love to do that, man.
Maybe when we're allowed to do things in person reliably again, we could set something like that up. So yes, basically, we would be up for that. We have to get some sort of VW camper van for it. But director's cuts of games. Who do you think is holding back or has been forced to hold back over the years? Most of them tend to force their ideas through, like the likes of Kojima, Ken Levine, whoever.
Well, you say that, but it's like, remember when Resident Evil 5 was announced? It actually was going to have a heatstroke mechanic, which was cut because of the fact they said it was too difficult to develop. And like, if it was given more time, they said it was just like not going to be something that they could continue working on at that pace and hit their release dates. Mm-hmm. And it was going to be like this thing where you'd have to take shelter in the shade while otherwise like Chris would hallucinate and stuff like that, or like see double enemies and stuff like that.
Okay.
And I was like, that actually would have been a really fun mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of like where, let's see, a director's cut off.
It's funny because I feel like the gaming industry is quite locked down when it comes to like behind the scenes, almost versions of stuff we almost got. Yeah. Only recently have you started getting, you know, interviews with like Amy Hennig talking about why she left EA or why what happened to her Star Wars project. She would be someone who I would love to see the games that she's worked on, because she's had so many titles cancelled.
Yeah.
It's so important.
I'd like to see Mass Effect Andromeda, the director's cut of that, like given the proper time, given the proper energy and like hands off from every other sort of like finger in the pie, as it were. Like, I reckon that there's a good game under there. It's just buried in monumental.
It definitely plays well enough. I think that whole thing about going forward, like they had that massive for N7 Day recently, they did the new Mass Effect poster thing where it looks like a Geth, and it seems like we're going like Liara's in there from the initial teaser and stuff. What's your thoughts on that? Because we did that for the main podcast with me, Ben, Roy, and Josh. But what are your quick thoughts on what the living hell BioWare can do with Mass Effect?
They need to do something that is akin to their previous success stories of 2 and 1, because Andromeda, no matter how you cut it, like it just was a monumental failure. And the fact that they stopped supporting it and basically were just like, nah, we're not even going to do any DLC.
What DLC? Like, how do you spell that?
Like roadmaps out the window sort of thing. Like, if they can go back to basics, as basic as you can get with a sci-fi odyssey of this nature, then that's going to be the right step forward. Don't try and gimmick it. Don't try and give us like a battle royale mode. Don't try and give us like a card game that's added into
battle
it. Don't try and do like an MMORPG of Mass Effect, even though I know that sounds cool. Remember how long it took Star Wars, the Old Republic, to get good? Like, just go back to doing what you do best and telling hands-off stories. That's
see,
what I
that,
want, a great
I,
story.
I, get Casey Hudson, assumedly, like you said, remove all EA stuff and just let him do a Mass Effect. Like, I know dude's been back and forward on it so much. He was center of the targeting reticule when all the Mass Effect 3 stuff happened.
Yeah.
But for me, there's not too many directors who make a name for themselves as directors who haven't been allowed to actually do their stuff. So I guess I would just echo what you said. But next question from Vin Van Meel, who says, hey lads, what is the best movie sequel and why does it start with a T and end in Terminator 2? Special mention to Spider-Man 2 and CGI Alfred Molina. I might go with Spider-Man 2, the best movie sequel ever.
The best movie sequel. I've also, my gut is telling me Two Towers, and I thought that would be your one straight away, because Two Towers is exceptional. Like, I know deep in my heart of hearts that The Fellowship of the Ring is the best film, and you're a fool if you argue. I know that you agree with me, Scott.
Because I had a Lord of the Rings themed wedding, mate, and you were there.
I know it was, but it's just like, it is such a well-crafted first film that even though the action of the second one was better, the story and heart of the first one, the drama, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I will say that, like, it's either that or Godfather Part 2.
Godfather Part 2 is a nicely academically approved shout.
Back to the Future as well.
I've never seen Back to the Future 2, which I know is... I know.
That's what watching on the party bus, mate.
There's 24-hour screenings of Back to the Future 2, but not 3, apparently. Apparently 3 is too bad. That's like a Western.
I actually have a really soft spot for 3.
People do. I'm sure Michael Hampler said that he likes that as well. And you mentioned Ghostbusters 2 is like something that's good as well. And that's
Ghostbusters 2 is bad, but I do enjoy it.
Some people, I'm sure Michael Hampler said that Ghostbusters 2 was better than Ghostbusters 1. And I don't know what level of madness that is.
Quickly, I know I'm going off on a tangent again, but Ghostbusters 2 actually had the one moment in all of the franchise that actually scared me genuinely.
Oh, really?
And that's the bit where the assistant to what's the name of the main villain in that? He's like inside a painting, and it'll come back to me.
Oh, Lord, something.
I want to say like Vigo or Victor or something like that. He's dressed as a Mary Poppins nanny, and he steals a baby and then flies off, and he's just got a really creepy, evil face and laughing. And that combination right there was terrifying.
Okay. I think to sort of mention sequel stuff, it's all the obvious stuff, like Empire Strikes Back, although personally I'll take A New Hope over Empire, but I like the tone change. And the other 4 Matrix fans in the world would say Matrix Reloaded because of how much it took that franchise and just blew it the hell up. Until Revolutions did the Revolutions.
It blew itself up.
I forgot that the Matrix 4 is coming for Christmas. Like, if you
right? It feels like a bit of a shadow launch, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's just sort of that, and John Wick 4, I think, are still both going to be out soonish. But yeah, to be honest, the Vin Vanmeel mentioned Terminator 2, and that is still a stellar sequel. Although, personally, I'll take the tone of Terminator 1. I like the whole gritty cyberpunk synth beats of Terminator 1. Next question from Travis Nichols. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Do you think boss battles are more enjoyable without health bars visible? Also, with the recent brilliant Bloodborne demaster to a PlayStation-style game, what game would you like to see have the similar demaster treatment?
Ooh, what would I like to see demastered? I'd like to say Fallout 76, but it's already doing that for me because of how absolutely broken it is.
Someone made it. Wouldn't be a PlayStation demaster. It would be earlier than that, but someone made a 2D version of Uncharted where it was jumping up and swinging and dropping down on people and doing little moves. And it was only a few screenshots for it, but I thought that was really cool. And I saw a 2D version of Halo as well, more like a Mega Man type thing.
I bet that is really
that's
good.
Cool. For me, I'm not that bothered about... I mean, I love old school polygonal graphics, but like, if you're going to talk about demasters, go further back for me. Take something, make it all lovely 2D pixely.
I'd like to see the Warriors video game done as a 2D side-scrolling brawler, because I know that they kind of got that as a standalone release, and it was like a bonus game in the game, but yes. I would just like to see them with the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game that's coming out with that amazing art style. Imagine that art style, but applied to the Warriors.
Man, there's I can't even think, it's called The Takeover. There's a YouTube channel called Matt McMuscles, and it's like
he's great.
And like he developed a game with like sort of 3 other people or something called The Takeover, and it's like the best side-scrolly brawler type game that I've played in years, and I try and play all of them, Mother Russia Bleed, Streets of Rage, whatever. But it's really, really good, and I feel like nowhere near enough people are talking about that. It's a really, really solid one of those games.
I've not heard of that one.
The whole thing about health bars, it's weird because I feel like Dark Souls brought back in the idea of the health bar, like visualizing it across the whole screen so you know just how close you are to victory. And that always has a real psychological effect on me personally. I always like watch the health bar go down or whatever, and I always have that feeling of like I can feel my heart speeding up. Like when I was beating Returnal the other day, I was just eyeballing the health bar. Like, I don't know. I think I do focus on it entirely, but I can see the argument for taking it away.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Think about every single tense moment in like the Monster Hunter series, though. Mm. Like, you only get visual degradation as the insight into how you're doing in the battle. And I absolutely love that. Mm. I can't say that it would work for every single boss battle going, but I would actually like to see Dark Souls take that and move it forward. Like, I'm actually surprised. I'm surprised that Elden Ring hasn't actually tried to do that. By the way, I know that we had a discussion about Elden Ring the other day, you and I. And you were saying like, oh, you were waiting for it to like really impress you because
it looks
like,
too much like Souls.
Do you know what? I actually went back and watched some people play through like Vati Video, playthrough of it. And I was just like, you know what? The amount of recycled assets in this is actually quite staggering. Like, everyone's going on about the crab battle at the moment. And I was like, that is literally the same crab animation from Dark Souls 3. Uh-huh. I'm like, okay, I can dig it because of the fact that you don't want to change up things too much. Fine, that's okay. You're reusing assets.
It almost shouldn't be that noticeable, though.
But then I was like, ooh, this game's taken a long, long time and you're using this amount of assets.
Like, if you just called it Dark Souls 4, fine.
I wouldn't have an issue.
I wouldn't have an issue at all. It almost is Dark Souls 4. Like, it's sort of, like, even the walking animation looks really similar. And yeah, it is an interesting conversation on that, because that was my thing that hit me straight away, was that it just looked like more Souls. And I get that's what people want. They want Dark Souls in an open world. But yeah, it is a weird line that they're walking with it.
Don't get me wrong, I'm still incredibly hyped to get it, and I will be getting it day one. Like,
yes, very fair. I think to mention one more thing about health bars, I feel like health bars in general are everywhere now. Like, every NPC, when you shoot them, has a little mini health bar Far Cry out of them.
Yeah, that's annoying. I hate that. Like, when I started playing Bioshock Infinite for the first time, that was the one thing that absolutely, like, got my goat. I was just, like, shooting people, and I was like, they didn't used to have health bars. Why do I need to see how much health they've got left? They're either alive or dead. I don't care, like, at the in-between.
I used to always talk, when Benji Richardson was still here, me and him used to have the nerdiest of nerd conversations that ever did nerd. Massive shout out to Benjamin Richardson if anyone wants to get in touch with him. He's a lovely man. But we used to always talk about how video games used to feel more magic back in the day. There was less elements that were visualized. There was less of the mathematics that was going on behind the scenes visualized, whereas now it's plus 10 damage, it's different loot components, it's health bars. It's all these different things that make you realize you're playing a spreadsheet, and I think some games do that worse than others, but the health bar stuff makes me more aware of that than ever. So I think it kind of goes game by game. Travis Nichols also said, do we think that the recent trend of Marvel games remaining separate and seeming to not build a connective universe is a good thing, or do you think it's a missed opportunity to not try and ostensibly do a gaming version of the MCU? Because you've got Spidey, you've got Guardians of the Galaxy, you've got Avengers. They mention each other in Easter eggs, but they're separate at the minute.
Yeah, I see what you mean, actually. I never really even thought about it like that. Like,
I can go either way. I feel like MCU is very tiring right now, so I kind of think that distancing themselves from that is for the better.
I do actually agree with you, because I am still, unfortunately, suffering burnout from the end of Infinity War.
Like, Endgame.
I can't get back into it. Like, I wanted to watch, is it Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten?
Shang-Chi is really good, yeah.
Like, I wanted to watch, what was it, Black Widow? Haven't watched that. I want to get back into it, but there's just something that's just saying, look, when it gets good, when it gets like everyone back together again, then I'll get back on. I don't know why, I just can't invest in these.
I wonder if it's a weird timing thing, because obviously Endgame was an ending and then we went straight into lockdown pandemic stuff, so time became a weird time bend anyway. And then now all they've had to keep us going is like, well, here's some TV shows and here's movies for characters that we should have done years ago. Like the Black Widow movie should have come out like arguably 10 years ago. And then now it's like, well, there's Shang-Chi, and they're not as well known as like Thor and Captain America. Mm-hmm. So it's like, the Shang-Chi movie is solid, but then the Eternals is out and no one cares, and then it's getting like review bombed anyway.
Not gonna lie, I couldn't give two pisses about the Eternals, because like, I just somewhere Ewan Paterson is like just like wringing his hands at the sky, like, Jules, this is not what I taught you for the comics channel. I'm sorry, Ewan, I just don't care.
Me neither, man. I think that's the I always kind of knew we were going to hit a point where I didn't grow up with these characters. I don't have the reference points for them, and I don't even know who the Eternals are. And it's not that I need that as a prerequisite. I barely knew who the Guardians of the Galaxy were before I saw those movies, but the Eternals just doesn't seem interesting at all. And then when the review scores are really low, I'm like, okay, well, fine. So yeah, I think
you don't feel like you've missed anything by that.
No,
you just
God,
go like,
not
okay,
at all.
Cool. Like that's actually saved me time.
Like I ended up reading, and I never do this. I've only done this like three times in my life. I read a spoiler. Yes, reading entire words back to back. I read the spoilers for Eternals, and because I was like, I just want to know what the crack. I can't be bothered to go sit through a 2-hour thing for this thing I don't care about. So I just read the spoilers, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, I guess so. But it's not like nothing. I wasn't even like, oh, that's cool. It was just,
you're just like, oh,
sure. Okay. Yeah, I guess you did that. But yeah, I think those different games are doing better by being separate. I think that stuff is, especially in Guardians' case, is doing really well. Next question from Lee Go Brick, who says, afternoon, lads. With Pokemon Diamond and Pearl approaching fast, what is your perfect Pokemon roster from the original 150? Is that will always be the benchmark for playing Pokemon on a school field in year 8? Who are you taking on to take to the Elite Four? Either tactical or sentimental choices?
You and I should build this together because I feel like we're probably going to have a lot of crossover, but... We should limit it to saying that you can only have one starter Pokemon between us. So on the count of three, even though there is a slight delay between us, we're going to go 3, 2, 1, and then you're going to say the one we're going to take, all right?
Okay.
Okay, so 3, 2, 1, Charizard.
Charmander.
Yeah!
No, become Charizard. I just want the dragon.
So we're taking Charmander and we're evolving him, obviously, into Charizard because he is the best.
Which I know the hardcore Pokemon fans, like Adam Cleary, my wife, will be saying that that's the worst thing to do because Charmander is terrible against Brock. And
the first couple of ones are a right struggle, I tell you that much. Yeah.
It's Charizard, so I don't know what you want, really. I don't know what evidence you've not seen, but it's Charizard.
At least he does better than Pikachu did in Pokemon Yellow against Brock. I mean, that was a struggle and a half.
I'll always take Charizard over almost anything else. Although Blastoise is a really cool design. I've always thought that was a really cool design. Big cannons in a shell. But
okay, so we've got one.
Okay, yes, we have Charmander. Well, evolved Charizard.
Are we going to go for the big one, Mewtwo?
If you can take a Mewtwo, any psychic damage if we're doing the original as well.
It's either that or Alakazam.
I was thinking that. It's probably going to be Mewtwo. I mean, if you get psychic damage is really OP in the original games anyway. Mm-hmm. So if we're talking like back in the day, it would be them. To be honest, most of my shouts would be the third evolutions of the starters if you could gather them all up. Like
We can only have one. So we've got three slots. Are we going to go Hitmonchan? Is it Hitmonlee?
Hitmonlee is the kicking one. Hitmonchan is the boxer. I was always a Hitmonlee fan.
Wait, no. Hitmonlee, Kickmonchan. Kickmonchan.
No. Hitmonchan and Hitmonlee.
Oh, they're both the same. Okay, right.
You're reading it, mate. It's the same, thing.
Are we going punchy or are we going kicky?
I always prefer kicks. If I was going to do a poll, punches versus kicks, I'll take kicks.
See, I loved Steve Fox from Tekken, so I was always about the punching. I don't know. I just like boxes. Boxes in video
Fox.
Games. That's what I meant to say. He boxes you. And then, and like Balrog, I absolutely love just like boxers in video games.
Oh, no, totally. I mean, I saw, that's the thing. I just prefer roundhouse kicks, big kicks, big Spartan kicks and stuff. But you can have the kicky. We will rename him Steve Box.
Okay, well, Steve Box, that's his name. What else should we go for? Should we go for some gimmick ones or should we go for some actually serious choices?
I tell you what, we could go for
a legendary.
You could go down one of the birds, Rooty, Zapdos, do a Moltres. I always preferred Zapdos because I like a bit of the old electric attack stuff.
Let's go Zapdos then.
I tell you what, as someone who's played Pokemon Stadium this year, Diglett is incredibly overpowered. Oh. And so is Dugtrio. Because you can just duck under everything and then smash it. So I might arguably take a nice powered up Dugtrio.
Okay.
Which I don't know if that's crazy or not.
So 4 out of 5, we probably need a flying Pokemon. Actually, no, we got Zapdos. He can fly us around.
Flying's a shout if any of the Elite Four have ground, which I don't remember.
What about Dragon?
20 years ago.
Should we go Dragon?
Well, like Aerodactyl.
Or I was thinking Dragonite or...
you can do Dragonair. Is that the one that gets really big?
It's been so long since I played the original one.
You mean the big orange one?
Yeah, the big chonker.
I think it's called Dragonite. Because there's the little tiddly...
We're going to call him Big Tiddler. It's like when we get him. Big Tiddler.
Yeah.
Are you Googling it now?
No, I'm not. I was seeing how long we've been talking about Pokemon. But no, I'm good.
Well, don't worry. So there's our team then. So we've got... Charmander / Charizard.
Yes.
We've got Zapdos. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We've got Hitmonlee.
Yes.
We've got Doug Trio. And our final one was, we just said its name, the Dragonair Dragonite.
It's whatever that is. It's whatever the big orange
tiddler,
one is.
Big Tiddler.
Yeah, yeah, big tids. It's
if we had to if we had to change out one of those, missing No, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Because then we could just capture everything.
Could you? Because I never did the missing No thing when I was a kid. Like,
you poor soul.
I know what it was. I had a mate who tried to do it, and then we never actually did it. But I mean, could you actually catch that thing? Or is it not just break the game?
You could catch it, but using it kind of had some sort of issues. Like, certain times it would just do no damage. Sometimes it would just use random attacks. You'd take a lot of damage. You'd be very useless as a party member, but you would be obviously able to use
it. It's doing it for the pride. Yeah, you want to have it in your team and then win anyway. Yeah. Next question from Secret Agent Randy Beans, who says, how many fingers am I holding up? Well, I think it's one. What about you?
I'm going to go with two. I think he's flipping his boat with...
Let us know next week, Secret Agent Randy Beans. Next question from Glenn O'Neill. Hi, guys. Why does playing video games feel so much different now than when we were younger? Is it because we are older, and or is it the games themselves? Cheers. I don't know.
I think it is the Principal Skinner meme of, like, maybe it's me. No, the children are wrong. Because I do find nowadays that there are a lot of video games that are coming out where I'm just looking at it, just going... Oh,
I've played 10 of them. I've played 20 of these.
Yeah, like I've just done everything that you're saying is new before, and you're packaging it up in a way that is offensively neon, and I hate it. And I don't like, it's just too loud. It's just too like, hey, wacky kids. It's like, I grew up on stuff like Bucky O'Hare and Biker Mice from Mars. So I know Zany, my friend.
SWAT cats. But this way.
But this is too much. This is too much like a boardroom just trying to be like, seriously, how do we appeal to X demographic?
That would be the quintessential thing that has become so much more present across the industry, across loads of entertainment. You can absolutely tell when it's a boardroom of people throwing darts at what might work and then hoping for the best. You can tell when something doesn't have a soul. Suicide Squad 2016 as a movie version, for example.
Yeah.
Or the Avengers game. Or Anthem or something. I think that stuff is more prevalent than ever. And I feel like that comes from... I hypothesize on this all the time because I think back to what was it about 2000s games or 90s games that felt better, quote unquote. Not that I think they are necessarily, but I wonder if it's just the sheer amount of data points available to executives now means they can focus test everything in a way that they couldn't before. And that meant more risks were taken back in the day. Also, when you were younger, you were more like wide-eyed amazed at everything anyway. And you were discovering these genres for the first time. But like you said, it's the same. Here's another Assassin's Creed. Here's another.
Yeah.
There's only one way that a first-person shooter controls now and things like that. So there is that side of it too.
We've reached a point of homogeneity and it's very hard to see the originals now, which actually cycles back to the question we were asked before about, do we think that it's harder for these lesser known indie games to get a look in when everything else is dominated by one or two types of game? Yes.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I'll tell you what though, I will say, if anyone's ever feeling fatigued towards the AAA scene, I just liken the AAA scene to a lot of the blockbuster stuff that's in Hollywood, and just go in the gaming space, go check out indies. There's a really great game called Unboxed or Unboxing right now that's on Game Pass, which is set in a bunch of time periods over the late 90s and the 2000s. It's literally just about unboxing parts of like furniture and different items and collectibles.
Unpacking.
Unpacking, that's the one. It's because there's boxes in it.
Yeah.
But, so I've done the first couple of levels.
Steve Box is in it.
Steve Box presents Unboxing / Unpacking. But that whole thing is, it nails like a 90s time period and a 2000s time period. And it does make you feel things in a way that no other game would. Because no game studio with a budget would have greenlit a game about unpacking boxes. But that stuff works really well. Games like Monomals, just little indie games, Dodgeball Academia. There are tons of indie games that have that spark that we had in the 2000s. That was on a bigger production scale. I would just say look at the indie scene and see what's coming to Game Pass and PlayStation Now and things like that. Next question from Jay, who says, with Guardians of the Galaxy having just come out and being met with a positive reception, it got them thinking. Out of any superhero / supervillain, which one would you choose to have a game based on? Theirs would be Nightcrawler because teleportation.
Oh, that would actually be really fun if we could get like a good teleportation gimmick, because here's the thing that a lot of people seem to miss when they talk about Nightcrawler is that when you see him teleport, when he bamps out, he's not actually just disappearing and instantaneously appearing in another place. He actually is entering a sub-reality. Yeah, right. So and he's running between those two points and going back in again. And apparently it's like full of sulfur, really dangerous. Like there's lots of like lava traps and stuff like that. So when he's running through, he might die trying just to get from point A to point B.
Okay. That's really cool. Nuts, I didn't even know that was a thing. Because I played
the BAMF, the smoke is the sulfur escaping in and out when he like comes in, apparently.
Ooh, what culture comics is there representing? I think because I played You Could Play as Nightcrawler in the X-Men 3 game, which I did for like 5 minutes until it was terrible. But like I can't think of that many games that have really used a teleportation mechanic. Like Titanfall 2's transport teleportation level is really cool.
Dishonored had one that was
Dishonored kind of has it too, yeah. It's I guess it depends how it's done. Like I guess Deathloop has it too. But
I think I'd like it if they did represent his travel through that little dimension. So it's like, say you've got to get from point A to point B and there's like a wall in front of you, you do it. You go into another thing and maybe it's like an obstacle like or portal. Like a quick time event style thing and you just go zoop, 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 and you're like zipping through. That would actually be really, really fun.
Yeah, they could do a really cool like puzzle game around that. I think for me, if you're picking any hero or villain, and it might be because it might be too similar to Spidey, but I would take a Venom game. Like just give me a really cool open world Venom game, kind of like, because you could play as him in Ultimate Spider-Man and you could go around devouring children if you wanted to. But I like the idea of playing as Venom. If you got the sort of banter that's in the new movies and have that sort of script writing in there, kind of like the old PS1 Spider-Man where the script was really tight and charming and funny, I would just take a Venom game, like a prototype style game, but you're playing as Venom. I think that would be that'd be cool.
I'd like to see a game where you get to play as Magneto, but from like his early years. So like him in the concentration camps destroying Nazis. That would actually be an amazingly satisfying game.
If you could do that
game.
Thing from X2 where he pulls the iron out of someone's blood.
Yeah, imagine that.
Like a fatality. Oh,
if you make it into like a really grim and dark storyline, maybe make it over the shoulder.
Put it up for Game of the Year.
Right now. Yeah, and then we just do like a really grim like origin story of him and then cut to him. You get to see how he goes down the descent, the path that he does of like mutants separate from humans. That would actually be a really cool conversation piece. Today
on like a long enough timeline. I forgot to mention the Wolverine game before as well, because that's the next thing that's called
the healing thing.
Insomnia. I mean, well, just like in terms of like an over, I'll be curious whether that is an over the shoulder style narrative delivery thing, because it is coming from Insomniac. Obviously they've had loads of success as Spider-Man, but like you said, you know, they did have that Raven Wolverine game that was way more like a God of War type thing. And whether that just is the style for superhero stuff. So it's like, it depends how it would be done. I would take Venom. I would do a big, crazy chaos open world thing.
Yeah.
And that'd be cool.
Like Crackdown almost style thing.
Yeah. Like massive leaps. I mean, leap buildings in a single bound. Yeah, do all that kind of stuff. Final question from Pinky / Dan the Liberal Doorman, who says, will there ever be a remake/remaster of Conker's Bad Fur Day? What in the metal loving hell also do you think of that new Trivium album?
Now, there already was a remaster of the Conker's Live and Reloaded for the Xbox, original Xbox, actually. And it was pretty good. They did tone it down a lot. They took out all the like swearing and like sexual stuff, which like admittedly is one of the reasons. It was admittedly one of the reasons why people play that game in the first place. So it was kind of like it looks nicer, but it is more sanitized thing. But
a little bit of that good on in GTA at the minute as well, but it hasn't been fully detailed yet.
I don't think that the Conker would be, if it was remade, it would be based off of the one that already was remade and it would be sanitized further. So you'd end up with just a cutesy platformer stuff. It'd probably be like more Bubsy.
Like that one, that HoloLens version of him that they were going to do.
Young Conker. Why would you bring that up?
I don't. I mean, look, marketing. Like I said, there's a whole bunch of them sitting there throwing the dart. Who had the dart that they threw that landed on Young Conker? Like of all the characters to try and do.
Landed in his eye, landed in his head. Like, the worst thing about it is the fact that they called him Young Conker and said, oh yeah, canonically, this is the younger version of him, which makes no sense because he's using high-end technology that was before. Anyway, but the problem is that you're now insinuating that this Conker that we're experiencing here is about to go on a really dark, depressing path that leads him to the alcoholic-natured one that he is in the N64
I would
title.
Totally take that game if you did it really well. Like, take a nice cutesy platformer and show how they became like a 90s GTA-style character.
So what you're saying is, is that we want another over-the-shoulder heavy story-driven game.
Let me interact with the environment, the crafting components. What do we think of that Trivium album? It's phenomenal. I think it's the best thing they've ever made. Have you had a chance to get through that Music Minute to end?
When you say this one, is this another new album?
No, they've got the In the Court of the Dragon. That's the new one.
That's the one I've been listening to. Yes. Yeah, I actually think that it's okay. It's silly, it's cheesy, but I'm kind of really here for it. I think that Matt Heafy is probably just sitting there just going like, you know what? People probably aren't listening to what I'm saying half the time. I'm just going to write some story about high fantasy stuff. I'm going to just get the leg of Damocles.
He's been watching Game of Thrones. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's some really. I mean, the thing is, they had that album in 2017, The Sin and the Sentence, which felt like them finally really becoming themselves. Like, if you grew up with metal, you grew up with rock, you knew that they were going to be the next big headliner, and then they dovetailed off and did a whole bunch of Metallica aping stuff, which I always loved. But like, they weren't Trivium for a while. It felt like ages until they were a proper identifiable sound again. But I feel like they got that in 2017, and then we had What the Dead Men Say last year, and that was like another
Dead Men Say.
And it's a song called Catastrophist as well, which again, I love. I'm Trivium, one of my favorite bands, but I feel like this latest one is that perfect mesh of like big complex song structures. The guitar solo, almost swore there, the effing guitar solo in The Court of the Dragon is the fastest thing I've ever heard, like some of the most impressive playing I've ever heard. If you're a metal fan, dive into Trivium's new album. They are on the form of their lives right now, and I think the new stuff is absolutely phenomenal.
They've not slowed down a single jot. But yeah, credit to them.
If anything, they've cranked it up times 10. But yes, thanks to everybody for sending in questions across previous weeks. And we will put out another tweet next Thursday. We'll gather up some new takes and different things. And more of us will have played GTA even more by then. So we'll see what state it's in going forward. For now, this has been the Untitled Bandit Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we'll catch you all next week. Bye-bye.
UBP, UBP.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.